Good morning.
A little bit.
A little bit. We're going to call to order the Ag and Food Finance and Policy Division. We are obviously not currently in session. We are holding a meeting today to review a bill that is going to hopefully come before the body in some time, I should say. And I'm very pleased to present this to everyone because it's the work of the conference committee that was called together for Ag and Housing and Rural Development. We are going to go through the Ag provisions. We had, as we concluded our regular session a couple of weeks ago, we were brought together as a conference committee. Senator Westrom holds the gavel in the Senate for finance, Ag finance and housing, and so he carried the bill on that side, and I had the bill on our side. We had five members of our committee. Representative Gunther was on the committee, as well as Representative Lippert, Representative Pelosi, Representative Hausman, and myself. And then Senator Westrom, Senator Draheim, Senator Dietzick, Senator Goggin, Senator Weber were on the Senate, were the Senate conferees. We met eight times in public for over 10 hours. We did our work in a very deliberate way. Mr. Nisley was attending most of those meetings, probably all of those meetings, I believe. And we certainly had our staff as well, nonpartisan and other partisan staff. So we went through the side-by-sides and the spreadsheets. We went through the House provisions, the Senate provisions. We were able to adopt the same and similar provisions that early on in the process. We adopted the grain buyers and the bioeconomy. Representative Anderson had those grain buyers that we made a few changes just based on the grain buyers task force, some additional things that they had suggested. The bioeconomy incentives, that was also passed. That was a bigger chunk. We were kind of happy when we were able to do numbers of pages at a time, so we were able to do that. We then, during the second week, adopted a lot of the housing policy. We don't need to talk about that here, but that was part of this bill, so we were able to do that as well. Probably some of the more controversial issues related to pasture land and pollinators, and so that was one of the final things that we were able to discuss, and we did come to some agreements on that and brought those forward and passed those. And then in the last, our last get-together, we were told that we would be able to have a budget and what the amount was. And so just for the sake of everyone's understanding, we had $4.51 million in the first biennium and then $3.9 million in the tails. So we had significantly less than what we originally had in the House amount, and then we had, and the Senate had more. So it was an opportunity for us to go through and find again some areas of agreement where we wanted to spend a little bit more money, and again, the House and Senate had a couple of different provisions that we were able to. I think we got a really good bill. I think for the Senate, they're happy with it. The House is happy with it, should be happy with it, because it's good, and it reflects the diversity of our legislature here at the House, the diversity of our committee, and the diversity of our who's in the Minnesota House, and it also is just a really good bill for agriculture. So I'm very proud of the work that we did. But today we're going to be able to have a walkthrough. So Mr. Savory will go through the spreadsheet. Mr. Sullivan will review the bill for us, and then we will allow everyone to ask questions, and we have some testifiers that will be able to speak to different portions of it. I will say, you know, when you pull together the House and the Senate, and they have sometimes different philosophies and different views of things, but agriculture is a unifier, and it was really good for us to be able to come together and know that we wanted to have a good product for the people who serve our, give us our food and our fuel, and do the work behind the scenes, all of those in agriculture. So I think we have a good bill. I think the production ag should be happy, certainly dairy farmers and corn and soybeans and everyone along the production ag side of things, as well as urban farmers and beginning farmers and farm-to-food shelf and farm-to-school and good food access, all of those things. So we combined a good bill with the House language and the Senate version, and combined our agriculture and food in a really good, strong way. So look forward to having our nonpartisan staff review what this bill is, and look forward to any questions you might have. So I will turn it over to Mr. Savory to be able to begin with the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record and for the tape, Ken Savory, House Fiscal Staff. As the Chair said, I'll be running through the spreadsheet, which I believe is in the front of the room, and members have it in their packets. I'll be specifically talking about two columns for this particular presentation. They're the ones all the way on the right-hand side. They're titled Omnibus Agriculture, Housing, Rural Development for 20 and 21, and then the same column just to the right of that for 22 and 23. So I'll just start generally with some orientation. Line 5 through 9 are just the general fund appropriations for the various departments within the bill. For today's presentation, I'll stick to only 3, which is the Department of Agriculture, Board of Animal Health, and AURI. So in total, on line 5 in the 20 and 21 column, you can see that $107,617,000 is appropriated to the Department of Agriculture in this bill. And then correspondingly in the 20 and 23, $107,006,000 is appropriated to the Department of Agriculture in the out years. The Board of Animal Health receives $11,354,000 in the 20 and 21, and then $11,354,000 in 22 and 23. Additionally, on line 7, AURI receives $7.7 million in 20 and 21, and the identical amount in 22 and 23. One other housekeeping item on all the way on the right-hand side, in two non-shaded columns, there are difference columns between this particular omnibus bill for 20 and 21 and compared to 22 and 23, so it takes the totals and compares those to the base. The next item that members will be familiar with is on line 14. This is Representative Anderson's bill regarding liquor stores that sell their own bagged ice. That is a negative $3 million loss to the general fund, and that language and thus general fund impact is in this bill. So that's on line 15. I'll jump now to the Department of Agriculture and proceed to the Protection Services Division. The first change item for that particular division is on line 55. The bill appropriates $250,000 on an ongoing basis to the incident management team. This is the governor's change item, which members heard about. Next change item is on line 57. It's for the noxious weed program, particularly the administration and staffing portion. It's $450,000 in 20 and 21 in each fiscal year, and then that appropriation decreases slightly in 22 and 23 to $225,000 each year. Line 58 is an appropriation to the meat inspection program. That's $150,000 each fiscal year in this biennium, and then in 22 and 23. Line 59 is an increase to the Industrial Hemp Development Program, or an appropriation to the Industrial Hemp Development Program. That's $175,000 each year on a permanent basis. Line 60 is an appropriation for the critical core capacity for plant pathogens and pests. That's $250,000 in each fiscal year on a permanent basis. Line 61 is an appropriation for the capital equipment replacement for a lab equipment which the Department of Agriculture maintains. That's $275,000 in 20 and 21, and then the appropriation changes down to $225,000 in fiscal years 22 and 23. Line 62 is the $5,000 carve-out within the Wolf Depredation Claims Program. All three parties, the governor, the Senate, and the House, had this coming in, and so that $5,000 carve-out to help pay University of Minnesota staff, eight staff educators, is there as well. And then finally, a new change item, which this committee may not be familiar with, is on line 64, which is the Prisoner Vocational Training Program. This bill eliminates that rider and program from the base, so at the negative $150,000 in each biennium. That concludes the Protection Services General Fund. We can flip the page over, and I'll proceed to the non-general fund change items. Line 81 is a federal match for the meat inspection program. It's a one-for-one match, so it's $150,000 in 20 and 21, and then permanently into the 22 and 23. Line 82, as the chair mentioned, is some spending related to the grain buyer examination fee. That starts in fiscal year 21 at $200,000 out of the Ag Fund, a statutory item, and that proceeds into 22 and 23. Line 83 is the extension of the AFREC grants program. That's $1.270 million starting in 20 and then going on into 22 and 23. And then line 84 is language related to the pesticide penalty enhancement, and Mr. Sullivan can go into that when he does his walkthrough. But that's just a small $1,000 ag spending that we're tracking for that particular language. I'll proceed now to the Promotion and Marketing Division. Line 111 is the governor's change item related to the agriculture, trade, and marketing. This is so that the $100,000 in 20 and 21, and the appropriation continues into 22 and 23. Line 112 is appropriation for the farmer mental health outreach line. It's $50,000 in each fiscal year, but that is on a one-time basis, so that concludes in fiscal year 21. And then I'll jump down to the ag portion. I'm just going to talk about one item and then have a separate spreadsheet to go over with this. We'll do that at the end of the spreadsheet. And so the one item I want to just make the members aware of is on line 151, the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation grants, which were in this division before, have been moved to the admin section. And so 151 is just the accounting of moving that money from one section to another. And then on line 155, I'll go into this in more detail in a moment, is the increase to the Agri program, so the Agri grants in general, the Agri appropriation. That's $157,000 in 20 and 21, and then $836,000 in the tails. And just for clarification, the Agri program appropriation was not changed. It's still a $9.3 million base going forward. Line 205 is the Minsky Mental Health Grants. That's an increase of $137,000 each fiscal year in 20 and 21, and then the increase dips slightly to $125,000 in 22 and 23. Line 208 is the Farm Advocates increase. This was $47,000 in 20 and 21, and that appropriation continues, that increase continues into the tails. Line 209 is a reduction of the Center for Rural Policy and Development. Essentially what happens is that the center receives $150,000 in 20 and 21, but is now made one time by the fact that the appropriation discontinues in 22 and 23. Line 21 is an increase to the Second Harvest Heartland, specifically for milk grants. It's $50,000 each fiscal year. This was in the House bill coming out of committee, so members may be familiar with that. Line 212 is just the accounting of the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation grants moving into this division for administration, but that is made one time in 22 and 23, so it's only in 20 and 21, which the appropriation still exists. Line 214 is an increase to mail C. $15,000 each fiscal year on a continual basis. Line 216 is just an accounting note that the Second Harvest Heartland riders have been combined into one. That was in the House bill originally. And then finally, line 218 through 221 is recognition that a number of pasture grants in the administration division are made one time, and those ones that were made one time are the Northern Crop Institute, the Livestock Breeders Association, mm-hmm. The Minnesota Poultry Association, with the only change being that an additional $1,000 has been moved into fiscal year 20, and then it's been eliminated going forward, and the Horticultural Society. So we'll flip the page and go through the Board of Animal Health and AURI. The Board of Animal Health received a general fund appropriation or increase on line 285 of $200,000 each fiscal year in 2021 and then into the tails, for $200,000 for ag emergency preparedness and response. Flipping the page one more time to line 310 at the top, it's an operating increase for AURI. That operating increase is permanent and is $100,000 in each fiscal year. And so I'll ask members to flip the page all the way to page number 6. I just wanted to talk about some revenues and things of that nature. That begins on line 423. That just accounts for the revenue being received by from federal payments regarding the meat inspection program. Line 426 is additional revenue related to the grain buyer examination fee into the ag fund. It's $10,000 of additional revenue. Line 427 is just the extension of the AFRAC grants that I spoke about before, just the revenue piece of it. And then again, revenue regarding the pesticide enhancement penalty fee. And then just on line 434, it's the general fund revenue related to Representative Anderson's ICE language related to liquor stores. And then if you flip to the last page of the spreadsheet, it'll say page 1 in the lower corner just because of the different spreadsheet, but we're going to talk about Agri. This is the spreadsheet regarding that. So line 3 lists the appropriation for Agri. As I mentioned before, the Agri program did receive increases, so the new appropriations for Agri are now $28,707,000 in 20 and 21. That's on line 3. And then it increases again to $29,386,000 in 22 and 23. Riders within the Agri program are starting on line 6. For county fairs, $1 million in each year. For the biofuel infrastructure cost share grants, it's $2.5 million in 2021, but then those increase to $3 million each year in the tails. Line 13 is the dairy production coverage, or the dairy appropriation or dairy carve-out. On line 13, that's $5 million only in fiscal year 20. And then below that is on line 15, the innovative soybean processing and research. We heard a presentation about this in this committee earlier this year. That's $5 million, but in fiscal year 21 on a one-time basis. Additionally, the Minnesota Turf Seed Council receives $75,000 in each fiscal year in 20 and 21 on a one-time basis. Line 17 is the Greater Mankato Growth or Green Seam Organization. They receive a $75,000 appropriation in fiscal year 20 on a one-time basis. And then jumping down to line 21, 22, and 24, Urban Youth Agriculture is $300,000 each fiscal year in 20 and 21 going forward. The same can be said for Good Food Access Program, $300,000 in 20 and 21 each fiscal year and going forward. And then additionally on line 24, the Farm to School program, $400,000 in each fiscal year on a permanent basis within Agri. And so, Madam Chair, I believe that concludes the spreadsheet. And with your permission, we could probably turn to Mr. Sullivan to go for the language.
Thank you, Mr. Savory. And we will turn to Mr. Sullivan, and we'll be able to look at the bill. Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair and members, I'll be working from the bill that's in members' packets. It obviously has not yet been introduced in the regular session, so there is no House file number. But in the top right, the reviser number for this draft bill is 19-5229, and it's dated 5/21 of 2019. And members will be familiar with a lot of the language in here because it's the same as the House position that was recommended by this committee and passed off the House floor. So I intend to highlight differences, maybe Senate-only language that the conferees accepted or changes from the House language that were adopted in conference committee. So the first item I'd like to note is on page 7. This is the, starting on 7.18, this is the Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation Program rider. And Mr. Savory described in the spreadsheet walkthrough sort of how the committee handled the agri appropriations. Just one note on, this is sort of a theme that members will see in multiple places in the bill. The Senate really made it a priority to provide money for robotic milking equipment through existing state programs. So for example, on 7.28, you'll see that within the livestock investment grant allowable use within agri, there's language that has the Department of Agriculture provide preference to robotic dairy milking equipment. So I think within the ranking of grant applications, robotic dairy milking equipment would be ranked a bit higher maybe than, for at least for this cycle, than other projects. Mr. Savory described the up to amounts that are for farm to school, good food access, and urban agriculture, so I won't highlight those. We'll move to page 9. This is still within agri, and Mr. Savory described what we sometimes refer to as the carve-outs or the designated allocations of a portion of the total agri appropriation. And the assistance for certain dairy farmers is on 9.16 through 9.27. Picking up the acronym that was in the House Jobs Bill, the DAIRY acronym, to describe this new program. And members will see that the eligibility criteria is provided in this rider. The money would be available to Minnesota dairy farmers who enroll for the full 5 years of coverage in the new Dairy Margin Coverage Program. That's a new federal program that's part of the 2018 Farm Bill that was enacted by Congress in December of last year. And the producers cannot have produced more. Eligible producers are those who did not produce more than 16 million pounds of milk in 2018. And the payments that would be awarded by the department under this language are based on the producer's 2018 production and would be limited to the first 5 million pounds of production per producer. And the rate needs to be determined by the commissioner within available funding based on the amount of demand and interest among eligible dairy farmers, so the rate is not known at this point. Then on 9.28 to 9.29, Mr. Savory described the Senate position, which is in here in the bill before members, to fund at $5 million one time the innovative soybean processing and research crusher facility that this committee heard about earlier this year. And then the greater Mankato growth, the one-time allocation of $75,000 starts on 9.30. On the next page, there's some Senate-only language. Oh, I guess I'd note, too, just the language that confirms what Mr. Savory stated on 10.5, that with the exception of the county fair money and the money that's allocated or designated for the bio-incentive or bio-economy programs, all the other allocations from the agri appropriation in this act would be one time or in effect only for fiscal years 20 and 21. And then there's a rider on starting on 10.21. This was Senate language that requires the Department of Agriculture to consult MnDOT and the Department of Administration and local units of government and identify at least 10 parcels of public land that would be suitable for urban agriculture. Then moving on to page 13, this is another Senate rider that was adopted by the conference committee on 13.29, 13.32. This language requires the Department of Agriculture to continue to increase connections with ethnic minority and immigrant farmers. On the next page, page 14, this is the bottom of 13 and on to 14 is the Board of Animal Health money. And I'll just note that the House had money to increase funding for the Farm Survey Oversight Program administered by the board. And that language is not in here in part because that issue was negotiated in the Environment Conference Committee, which is not yet complete, so, but that's the idea, is that additional funding for the Board of Animal Health may be carried in that bill instead. Then we have a number of house-only sections starting on page 14 that were recommended by the department and adopted by the conference committee, basically extending the availability or modifying uses of prior appropriated dollars to the Department of Agriculture. Then on page 27 is the beginning of general agriculture statutory language. There are a couple of additional articles later on that deal with bio-incentive programs and grain buyers and grain storage licensees, but these are sort of the other agriculture statutory items that are within the bill in Article 2. Section 1 is a Senate-only, or was a Senate provision that was adopted by the conference committee. And what this does is it modifies eligible uses of the agricultural emergency account. And the intent here is to limit uses of the money to responding to ag emergencies, to actual agricultural emergencies. So the department could no longer spend money to prepare, to develop plans or otherwise prepare for the next ag emergency. But I will note that within the appropriations section, prior article, there is money now, base general fund money, to the department for preparedness and response activities. So although the department can no longer use money in this account for preparedness, there is a separate appropriation now that would provide funding for that activity. Then moving on to page 29, within section 3, prohibited pesticide use, this was House language, as amended on the House floor, to provide enhanced penalties for pesticide applications that damage adjacent land, not only state outdoor recreation land, but also land within the Twin Cities metropolitan area that's part of the regional park system. The regional park system language was not adopted by the conference committee, so the language on 29.14 to 29.17 provides for opportunity for the commissioner to impose enhanced penalties only for applications that damage adjacent outdoor recreation land. And that's, again, that's state-owned land, that's state parks, state forests, MnDOT rest areas, historical sites, and other outdoor lands owned by the state. And actually, one note, too, on page 31, the second section that goes along with Section 3 is Section 9 at the bottom of page 31. That was modified a little bit from the House language, again, to eliminate the metro regional parks, but also to provide a little more discretion to the Department of Agriculture. You'll see on 32.1, now the language reads that a person who applies a pesticide and damages the adjacent public state-owned land may be subject to a monetary penalty. The language, the House language going into conference committee said the person is subject to an enhanced monetary penalty of twice the amount that would normally be assessed. So this provides a little more leeway for the Commissioner of Agriculture and the Department of Ag to exercise judgment about whether that enhanced penalty is in fact warranted in a particular situation or not. Then also on page 31, you'll note that the conference committee accepted the House position to extend AFREC by 5 years. The Senate had proposed, and the Department of Agriculture had proposed to extend it by 10. And there's language on 31.23 that the AFREC projects, they need to disseminate their findings to not only the production ag community, but also metropolitan fertilizer users when applicable. There was House language originally that went into conference, passed off the House floor, that provided that up to 10% of the grant awards from AFREC each year could be used for metro fertilizer projects, but that language was not adopted in the conference committee. Then on page 32 at the bottom, this is new language for members of the House. This basically, the Senate had language, they felt that the existing livestock expansion loan program could not provide loans to farmers who were looking to modernize, in particular, again, dairy farmers who might be looking for financial assistance to install robotic milking equipment. So there was some discussion and kind of differing opinions on whether this language in statute could already provide for that. So basically what you see in sections 13 and 14 are just clarifications, changing the name of the program and a couple of spots in statute just to make clear that loans can be issued by the Rural Finance Authority in conjunction with participating private lenders to fund modernization projects at livestock farms in the state. Then on page 34, section 15, again on the robotic equipment theme, this is Senate language for the Rural Finance Authority's livestock equipment loan program, so a different loan program administered by the authority. 34.13 just clarifies that milking equipment that's eligible for a loan under the program includes robotic equipment. Then next are some Senate sections, too, that were not in the House bill, and beginning with section 16, pastures. This was Senate-only language that was discussed in conference committee and ultimately modified and adopted by the conferees. And this language, as explained by the Senate, does a couple of things. And this is within Chapter 116, the feedlot law that's administered by the Pollution Control Agency. And what this language does is attempts to consolidate a couple of existing definitions of pasture into just this one new definition, so everything's in one place. And then the addition beyond current law is in Clause 4, which starts on 35.7. And basically, in essence, pasture lands, as defined, are exempt from feedlot permits and feedlot permitting requirements. So that's the significance of what is and is not defined as a pasture. And Clause 4, beginning on 35.7, defines a new type of pasture as sacrificial areas or areas of the larger pasture land or pasture system or complex that are used temporarily to basically herd up the livestock and prevent damage to the rest of the pasture land during adverse weather or other conditions. So obviously the grass in that area is trampled down and consumed by the livestock, but then it's only for 90 days or up to 90 days during the growing season can this sacrificial area that's not then falling under the feedlot permit able to be used in this way, as long as then when the livestock are dispersed afterwards and the adverse weather condition is over, the vegetation in that area is either naturally restored or replanted. So that's the new piece. That's the expansion of the existing exemption for pasture land. And then there are a couple of conforming changes on the following section, section 17, and then the following section after that, section 18. But then there's additional language, too, to note on page 36, 36.24 to 36.26. This is language providing that feedlot permits issued by MPCA or counties must not include terms or conditions that restrict or provide requirements that apply to pasture land, unless those restrictions are related directly to a manure management plan. So pasture land would be subject to manure management plan provisions, but other restrictions that apply to feedlots do not apply to pasture land as clarified or stated in this new sentence. So then on page 38, you see just language eliminating, as I mentioned, one of the existing definitions of pasture that's now been consolidated. Same thing on page 39, lines 39.8 to 39.13. Then on page 39, section 19, industrial hemp rulemaking, both the House and the Senate in different bills, but in the same manner would provide expedited rulemaking authority for the Department of Agriculture concerning hemp rules that are, in this case, in this language, only those rules that are necessary to conform with the Federal Farm Bill and the industrial hemp legalization language that was included therein. And as in the Senate proposal, this is temporary authority, and it would expire as provided on 39.19 on June 30th, 2020. So if the department were to do industrial hemp rules, additional rulemaking after that date, they would need to do it as part of the full and formal rulemaking process or propose to the legislature an extension of the expedited authority. On page 40, at the top, this was a House section requiring a report. There was just a terminology change in conference from beginning farmers to emerging farmers. And then section 22, members will recall the House passed language that modified the pollinator-friendly nursery stock labeling requirements. The conference discussed that issue and ultimately decided to require a report and recommendations of the Department of Agriculture regarding its capabilities in that area with the laboratory equipment and also the cost to perform tests that would be necessary to verify and to what extent nursery stock had been exposed to certain pesticides. Then on page 40, Article 3, as the collection of changes to the three, sometimes referred to as bioeconomy or bioincentive programs, the Advanced Biofuel, Renewable Chemical, and Biomass Thermal Production Incentive Programs administered by the Department of Agriculture. This language is all the House position with one change in all three programs. I'll just highlight, the language is the same, but I'll highlight the language for the Advanced Biofuel Production Incentive Program on 42.2 to 42.5. In anticipation that there may not always be enough funding appropriated for these programs to fully pay all eligible producers at statutory levels, the current law provides that in that event, payments are to be made by the department on a first-come, first-served basis. The conference committee modified that as proposed by the Senate to say that in that situation, instead, there'd be proportional payments to all eligible producers. So they would all receive some amount of state assistance, but maybe not at the full statutory levels in the event there isn't sufficient money appropriated. And that, again, will apply to all three of the bioeconomy or bioincentive programs. On page 46, then we have language that members will recognize, the modifications to requirements for licensed grain buyers and licensed grain storage facilities or warehouses. These, again, were recommendations picked up by both the House and the Senate from an advisory committee that the Department of Agriculture convened as after a couple of smaller elevators became insolvent in the state and did not have sufficient money or grain to compensate farmers. So there were a number of technical stylistic differences that were sorted out in conference committee. A couple of things to note is that all of the sections, as you can see, for example, in section one has the effective date. The effective date was pushed out by the conferees 1 year. I think in both the House and the Senate, these changes would have taken effect for the upcoming license period beginning on July 1st of this year. And the conferees agreed to move these changes out 1 year, so they will not take effect until the license year that begins July 1st, 2020. A couple of new pieces that should point out to members on 48, page 48, lines 48.19 to 48.21. Both the House and the Senate adopted the advisory group and the department's recommendation to require annual inspections of licensed grain buyers and to establish a commensurate fee to pay for that activity. The department suggested and the conferees adopted language that would say that if a licensed grain buyer is inspected not by MDA but by the United States Department of Agriculture, that a grain buyer does not need to pay the inspection fee to the department who would not be performing that activity. So that's on 48.19, 48.21. Then on page 51, skipping ahead, these are the new audit or CPA review requirements for the financial statements that are submitted as required to the department annually about the financial status of licensed grain buyers. The advisory group recommended a threshold of $2 million, and that was in the House bill. So grain buyers who purchase less than in the House bill, and as recommended by the group, $2 million would have to have their financial statements reviewed, which is a lower level of attestation. And those with more than $2 million have to have a full audit, which is more expensive, obviously. The conferees ultimately went with the Senate level, which is on 51.19. 51.23 of $5 million. So the threshold for the financial statement attestation now is at $5 million rather than $2 million. On page 52, this is still within the grain buyer requirements, 52.4 to 52.7, this was Senate language. and it requires the department to provide to licensed grain buyers annually information on the fiduciary duties of those who are responsible for management of the grain buyer operation. The idea being, I think, that they make more responsible decisions or understand maybe their own personal liability if reminded periodically about their fiduciary duties. And there's a section later on that's going to require the department to, in conjunction with the Minnesota State Bar Association, to develop these materials. It's likely they don't exist right now, or something that suitable for grain buyers doesn't exist right now. And then because the department can't make the licensee or the person who handles the license renewal distribute this information, and to the extent practicable, the commissioner is to direct the licensee to provide this information to all persons required to certify the financial statements submitted to the department. I should jump back because that's actually different from the House Bill 2. That's on page 51, 51.15. Under current law, the CEO of the grain buyer is required to certify that the financial statements are accurate. With this language that the Senate brought to conference and was adopted, also the members of the governing board of directors, if there is such a board for the organization, would also need to certify that the financial statements are accurate. So this new fiduciary duty information is intended to get to the CEO and the board of directors. So that's language then is the same or just technically different from language adopted by the House. On page 57, getting to the end of the grain language, just a note on 57.13 to 57.14, the intent of this language is that the $5 million threshold, the financial statement review or audit requirements, the certification requirements are intended to apply to the separate category of licensee. These are the grain storage, grain warehouse licensees. So they would have the same, under this language, requirements regarding financial statements as the grain buyer licensees. They'd be uniform between the two categories or two types of license. Then the development of the fiduciary information that I mentioned for grain buyers and grain storage licensees, that's section 19 on page 57. And, Madam Chair, that is the end of the agricultural statutory provisions. Again, the House had Farm Survey language in its bill, but that issue was discussed in a different conference committee.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Any initial questions? Representative Brand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the initial questions I had, I flagged on page 46. It would be Section 12, Subdivision 3, Cellulosic Forestry Biomass Requirements. Looks like the difference between what we had produced and what the Senate also produced and what the conference committee. We included on page 46.9, Tribal Land. I'm curious to know whether or not the tribal authorities were vetted for this language change and if they're okay with it.
I believe they were contacted and we're made aware of it, and we're okay with it.
Okay. Another question I had was on page 40, section 22, nursery stock. So we're going from a change in law to, I just wanted to be clear, we're going from a change in law to a report. Is that correct?
We are requesting a report rather than the original House provision.
Okay. And then on page, let's see, 34, section 16, it looks like we're making some pretty big changes to pasture lands. And I'm just kind of curious, we hadn't heard anything like this in our committee. Mm-hmm. It was only in the Senate, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
That is correct.
Those are my questions.
Thank you. And we will probably hear some testimony from people that were more engaged in that, but I certainly can address that as well. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, Madam Chair, just Representative Anderson's also watching, right? He's trying to get his crops in, and sure. He spoke to Mr. Knisely, and and Representative Anderson said something about using a pontoon trying to get his crops in. So it's pretty wet out there, obviously. And so he had sent in a couple questions, one being on the dairy assistance, roughly what size of herd is eligible under that program?
We are expecting that we'll have an additional $3 million coming from the jobs bill, so that would be a total of eight. So I think we are looking at it will roughly be about the size that we initially had indicated, but I will make sure that the department can clarify that, because I think we were looking at around 500 to 750, but I but I'll see if somebody 750 was our herd size, yes. And I think that with this money, I think combined, I think we'll be able to reach that.
Okay, thank you. The other question, or more, it looks like a comment, is that he believed he heard on the ICE bill. The revenue loss is $3,000 per year. He thought it was stated $3 million per year was the revenue loss, and so he just wanted clarification.
Thank you for that clarification. Okay. Yes, it's a very minor amount. It's $3,000. So, yes, thank you for noting that.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have a couple questions or comments. Just when the agreed language, and you and I did speak about this, but there were a couple carve-outs initially in both the House and the Senate for agreed. And I just want to make sure, have those been moved to a different section of the bill?
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. So the carve-out the Senate had was for the soy, so the soy crusher. So that is separate. That's under agri, now, rather than agreed. So if people are following at home, that might be there are two different things, but that switches there. And ours, we just reverted to the original language. Both sides agreed that we did not want to carve out or otherwise change agreed as it came originally before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that brings up a comment. Thank you for the agree language, A-G-R-I. And I'll go back to when Representative Junkie was, or Chair Junkie, was establishing the agri account. I would say that it was, I believe, from my perspective, the legislative intent to where the legislators could have more of an input on how those dollars were going to be spent. And I was, I won't speak for everybody else, but I was critical of the department really having a tight stranglehold, if you will, on those dollars. And I like the fact that through the conference committee, you were able to negotiate some of those very important projects that are now funded through AGRI. And the legislators were able to make that decision and determination. And I really like that approach, Madam Chair, so thank you for that. The other thing that one of those areas that I guess I question a little bit on the Center for Rural Policy and Development. I think they do fantastic work, right? And for the center, I guess I'm trying to phrase my question. I'm not asking for, you know, challenging motives from the Senate or anything like that. I'm just trying to gain an understanding on why that went to one-time funding, if you could share any insight on that at all.
I would say, Representative Hamilton, members, the Senate originally came in at $50,000 each year, and so we were actually higher than that. We wanted more than $150,000, I believe, or for at least the first go around. So that was the compromise, that we get $150,000, which is the base, but that it be made one time.
Right. And Madam Chair, thank you to you for going looking out for the center, because I was afraid that that funding was going in a completely different direction. So credit to you on that. I also support the language for the ag emergency and response. That's very critical with some of the threats on emerging diseases and others. So I really appreciate that in a big way. And Madam Chair, just going back to before we hear the testimony, going back to the floor debate, you know, in the final hours, I want to stress that the concerns that I had on the floor was not a direct reflection on you or anybody from the conference committee, right? You and I, we came in as freshmen together. We've seen it many, many times where it's getting late in the legislative process. The bills are finally posted or brought to light, and then we scramble to try to figure out what's in them. And I was not questioning or challenging, you know, the trust in any way, shape, or form, right? That was not my intent. I was trying to read through the bill as quickly as I could, consulting staff, and then I had a number of members coming over during that process as well, asking what's in the bill or whatever. So then I chose to stay off the board. That's what I said I was going to do, because in the event, which it appears like this is a very good bill, and in the event it was a good bill, I didn't want to be voting against it, right? And if there was something in there that I wasn't quite familiar with, then, or didn't support, right, because we may have disagreements, then I didn't want to be voting for something, not fully understanding what all was in it. And basically, it's more of a criticism of what has become systemic around here. Both Democrats and Republicans have done it. And hopefully, collectively, as a body, we can challenge all our leaders on getting the budgets negotiated in time to where we can actually have time to do our work. And I'm learning something here that this is very beneficial, having an informational hearing like this. And I would like to see that with every bill coming out of conference committee, if we could do that, to where we come back get the entire, like, ag or health and human services or whatever, just to walk through the bill like this so that we can all be educated on what's actually in it. I really appreciate this process, Madam Chair. So those are, I guess, my questions and the comments at this time, and thank you for having this meeting.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Representative Pawlowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is to Representative Hamilton's point, and it's also to the point of all of the members of the House. It's interesting that once we have a failure, there is suddenly a realization that we may need reform here. For the last 10 years, we have seen a struggle to complete sessions on time. This is the 17th special session in the last 21 years. So we have had failure after failure after failure, and when attempts are made to reform this process, nobody is interested at the beginning of session, and apparently everybody is interested at the end of session. So to that end, I am the chair of a subcommittee of the Rules Committee that was just created this session on legislative reform. I fully intend now to have hearings. And I would hope we'd have the participation, as we've had in the past, of the majority and minority parties, so that we would reform this body. I want to remind everyone, our constitutional responsibility is to pass a balanced budget. It is not to flood this legislature with thousands of bills that we have no capacity to hear or, frankly, even to process, so that we should start to take a look at what our constitutional responsibility is. This is one element of it, to make sure that this bill works, that this bill is part of a balanced budget. I'm taking the forum now, Madam Chair, and I appreciate it, to remind the body that we do need legislative reform.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. And I think lots of nodding heads around the table understanding that. And you know, thanks for the note, too, about the staff and the strain that we've put on them. You know, we worked until 4 a.m. We had Mr. Savory and Mr. Sullivan in the room with us. The Senate had their researchers as well. So we put them through that. And most of these people, this isn't their only committee. Just like our own staff, this isn't their only committee. So they also had to then go to another committee to go through another number of hours of managing the spreadsheets or writing the right language in. And so we have done that to our staff, and we expect them, you know, to be able to respond very quickly and precisely. And I just want to again say Mr. Savory and Mr. Sullivan are two of the finest gentlemen that walk on the face of this earth. They are just wonderful. They're so calm and collected and helpful. And I know both the majority and the minority, as we have switched, Representative Hamilton, you mentioned we started at the same time. We've been in the majority and the minority, both have worked together, and we know the value of the strong nonpartisan staff that we have, as we also have very strong partisan staff who understand the process and help us all to do our jobs better. And so I appreciate that. And I appreciate your comments, Representative Pelosi, that this was an unfortunate situation. We had a bill ready to go much earlier in the day. We had some issues that came up more on the housing part of this, and that, and the reason those two are together, just to clarify, is because that's how the Senate committee is. They are they do have agriculture, housing, and rural development, so that's why we have broadband, and Representative Pelosi is the chair of the Greater Minnesota Committee, so he's on the, he was on the conference committee, but all of those three came together, and that's really kind of how that worked. And so we were doing everything we could to try to, you know, peel off from them and to be able to bring forward our bill. But in the end, you know, we all survived. We're all going to get through. This is a good bill. Everybody has the opportunity to hear about it, and I appreciate that. So I think we'll turn to testimony now. Oh, Representative Wasilewicz has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say really appreciative of the mental health grants to Minskew, so we can hire another Ted Matthews, as we say. And I was just wondering if you could maybe give a little insight into the Farmer Legal Assistance Hotline. I know that isn't getting funding. And is there another place in the ag, in our purview where we can kind of make sure that we're covering that? And all Farm Advocates does that kind of stuff too as well. If you could just speak to that briefly.
Thank you, Representative Wasilewicz and members. We did not fund additional dollars to the Farmer Legal Action Group or that hotline for legal aid. We did add money to the Rural Mental Health Hotline, and we added money to the Farm Advocates, and those are the people that most directly are connected with farmers who may be struggling or looking at situations that they'd like to have some assistance with. So that was one thing that we were not able to get in conference. I don't see any other committee questions at this moment, so I think we'll turn to some of the testifiers. And I believe Commissioner Peterson is here if he wants to be able to start us off. Appreciate that. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Peterson. We all need to know this about Commissioner Tom, as Representative Bang referred to him, kind of like that. He is an outstanding ag commissioner. You all need to be aware that he really did a very fine job of helping to mediate at times, helping to advocate at times, and helped us through this process as we came together between the House and Senate. So welcome to the committee. It's been a pleasure to work with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, my name's Tom Peterson, and I serve as Commissioner of Agriculture. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to voice the administration's support for this legislation, and also just to echo the comments of the work that all the legislators, the chairs, put into the committee after done this a different way for 17 years. It was interesting to come together to make hard choices with the money, the policies we had to work with. Again, Minnesota being the one state in the union that has a Republican and a Senate and a Democratic House. The nice thing about working in the agriculture space is, in general, we work really well together. And I think to better the lives of our farmers. And this committee, and we've talked about that for many times right now, as our farmers are struggling with the lowest farm prices that we have in 23 years, with a really tough winter and a very tough spring. This bill goes a long way to helping our farmers. And so I really appreciate the efforts that we put forward today. If you look at this legislation, it really encompasses all different types of agriculture. It looks at our priorities that we put forward as the Department of Agriculture, looking at what we were facing in the early session. So some of these things in the bill that I'd like to highlight is there's more money for the Department of Ag to help boost our trade program, both foreign and domestic, to work with our partners. We know trade is a huge issue and I'm very excited about some of the opportunities we have. You know, we're struggling with China, obviously, right now, but we're going to be able to reach out to some of those other countries, and we're doing that, and we're provided some opportunities in this. We also have a position that's going to be able to help us with boost our farm-to-school program. We have dollars to help boost our meat processing, which is something that we've heard that we need to try to improve our delivery and time. But there's just a demand. We've created a good demand for meat processing in Minnesota. There's dollars for hemp. Continue to grow our hemp program in Minnesota, and I really appreciate the legislature's continued willingness to invest in this. It's exciting. We're growing. We're nearing 600 applications this year, which is a tremendous boost. We see it. I get calls every day that we're continuing to do this. We have a continued support for our export certification program, which is very important for our farmers who are doing some different things. I'd like to thank the House and Chair Poppy especially for going to bat for some dollars for our lab, which many of you have toured. The Senate did not have any dollars for that. It's a tough one, too, but it is very important, and so really appreciate that piece as well. Representative Hamilton mentioned our egg preparedness and being prepared for African swine fever, continued things like avian influenza, bovine TB. But African swine fever is a big deal. And to have the money and the resources to help protect our pork industry. And it's not just our, you know, our concentrated farms, but it's also, it could affect our backyard farms. It could affect niche marketing. If it comes to the United States, it will affect the entire hog herd. And that's a big industry for Minnesota. And so that is very helpful. Also, noxious weeds, Palmer amaranth. And finally, as Representative Wasilik mentioned and highlighted, to the increased funding for our mental health, incredibly important, as well as our farm advocates. There are some controversial things in here, that the double penalties, the task force that was created for the nursery stock. The pasture language was something that the Senate felt very strongly about. It's a pollution control agency piece. From where the Senate started to where this language ended up is totally different. This is scoped very narrowly. It will help farmers who are facing an extraordinary position. And I've worked on this over many years. And so when farmers have flooded pastures and they want to save their pasture, they need a sacrificial area, there's going to be a determination of extraordinary, and it's up to 90 days and needs to be brought back. And it's up to 90 days. The extraordinary process may last 10 days. It's very going to be, in my mind, and after visiting with the people that helped us craft this language, is very narrow, but will also help our farmers as well. Finally, I'd like to highlight the grain buyers, a very important piece that was put in the legislation. I appreciate the legislators continuing to work on this. And finally, I'd like to highlight some of the things, again, that I think are important things that the department is, or the legislature is doing in this bill. We did increase in agri amounts allowable for farm-to-school, the good food access, urban ag, and we are funding the Greater Mankato or Green Seam too, through Agri this time too. But the really two big things that working with the Senate and the House through this process are the Soy Innovation Campus. We really feel like as an administration and working with the legislators, now is the time to take a big, bold step in this direction. With farmers who were calling me 2 weeks ago and really didn't like the $7 beans, and then last week beans went to $6. And we look at the value-added operations, we look at that project, we look at what North Dakota is trying to do. Now's the time for Minnesota to take a shot at this. And here's the opportunity and a good plan. And so it's a bold step that the legislature is taking here to help our farmers. And I think that this project also could help our hemp, our Kernza, by doing different crushing and things as well. And then finally, I'd like to end on our dairy again. And, you know, we have to, you know, take a shot at this right now and really appreciate the effort the legislature put forward in this. And I will leave it at that and glad to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Anyone have any questions? Representative Brand.
Thank you, Commissioner Peterson, for being here today. I had a couple of questions for you real quickly. I just wanted to get your perspective. So back to bring everybody back to speed, in March 12th, I believe, we passed some legislation out of the House that we had passed out of here for rural mental health for farmers in particular. And it was a re-expenditure of existing allocation of funds for farmer mental health in order to get some more folks some help. And I'm just kind of curious if you know whether or not we've had any farmer suicide since we passed that out of the House.
Commissioner Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Brand, yeah, we have.
Representative Brand.
I care deeply about farming. I come from a farming background. My grandparents were farmers. A lot of my my friends are farmers, and I think that it's incredibly unfortunate that we weren't able to get it passed in the Senate also, that we weren't able to get that reallocation of that money to the governor's desk to help farmers. Another question I had for you, this bill doesn't have any chronic waste and disease provisions in that. It's been shifted to the environmental committee. Our conference committee. Any feelings about that, good or bad? Mm-hmm.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative Brand, thank you for your comments. And I just do want to comment on the mental health a little bit further. And I appreciate both bodies working to come up with the ultimate dollars that we do have. Departments working with all our partners, with all our farm groups, legislators, to do what we can to make sure that we have help available to farmers. And we are seeing farmers using those opportunities. And so I think that we'll continue to do that as we are in this rough case. But I do thank the legislators for the action we're taking in this bill. On chronic wasting disease, I'd like to thank this committee. I'd like to thank Chair Poppy for her leadership on this really important issue. You know, basically, this committee did the work, and then it went to another jurisdiction. But Chair Poppy, we've stayed very engaged in that. Department of Ag, we talked about being a mediator. I feel like sometimes that's where I, between the Board of Animal Health and the DNR, but our agencies are on the same page, and we've been staying on the same page. On, again, this is a big piece that's facing, Minnesota's facing. And so we are being proactive on this. We are taking steps. And for those of you that are follow the environment bill, we did take some portions that the minority specifically brought up, whether it was ear tagging or some different things, and we're able to roll those into the final bill and compromise. You know, and I think, again, the word there on the chronic wasting disease is compromise, and we're going to be working with our deer farmers and our different programs that we have on some of the fencing requirements that they're going to have to meet. But again, a very important issue where, you know, I was in a lot of those talks and discussions, and we'll continue to move forward on that.
Thank you.
Representative Wasilbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I don't know if you talked about the capital money for the lab. Could you talk a little bit about kind of what your priorities are in terms of using what you're going to use the funds for, if you happen to know offhand?
Commissioner Peterson.
Yeah, and I don't have my, actually I might have my notes, but we have our lab director here, and if it's okay, I would like him to just come down and just say how we might use those dollars. Why he's coming down, he is here, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. He's getting his. He has to get his notes. So we also the some of the other pieces. We have money for a lab, but there's also dollars within like the, our meat inspection appropriation and our critical core that also work with the lab as well. So.
Welcome to the committee, and state your name, and then if you didn't hear the question, Representative Wasler can ask it again. But
thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Gary Horvath. I'm the lab director for the Department of Agriculture, and if you could repeat the question, it would be helpful.
Yes, Representative Wasler.
I'm just curious as to kind of what your top priorities are with some of the money to help with the lab.
Mr. Horvath.
So we have a capital equipment budget. Those are items over $30,000. That's inventory of about $6-7 million. Part of what the struggle we have is some of these things are near or at their life expectancy. We just got notice today from a vendor that the state is moving to Windows 10 and we can't upgrade the computer that drives that, so that's forced us. We've had a lot of security issues with Minute, having to take equipment off the server, so it affects our workflow. So we want to maintain currency in that equipment, and that's just an overall challenge. We have specific issues as far as there's some new technology that would help us serve the program better. Like in feed, we just saw a demonstration of some rapid tests. So we're looking at that. Part of what we want to do is, positions are tough to get, as we all know. So we're always looking for ways to improve efficiency. And with the new mass spectrometers, which is a technique we use for water analysis, for pesticides, we're looking at shifting to a change in our method that would allow us to direct inject water without a lot of chemical manipulation, which is very labor intensive. But that would require us to replace two pieces of equipment that are each about $500,000. We do have an LCCMR proposal that would purchase one of those. And then with the money, we think we can get the other machine and we can move that methodology, and that has to be verified. So we have multiple challenges that we face, just stuff wears out and breaks, and we had a major freezer go out, and it's just our base budget. The challenge for us is the ag accounts cannot support the equipment that is needed nowadays. You know, the technology has morphed into very expensive equipment to get fast turnaround, to get better legally defensible data. And when we have a machine that supports like a dairy program or a feed program, we can literally wipe out our total budget trying to purchase that item. And so the move to provide capital equipment out of the general fund, my philosophy and what I've advocated for, and this is a move in that direction, which I'm very, very appreciative of this body and the Senate, is that it's really should capital equipment in a modern lab should be viewed similarly as the lab itself as far as the core infrastructure of what it takes to have a modern laboratory, and trying to make these smaller dairy program, feed program, bear the cost of this equipment has just been a challenge. I've been here 34 years in June, and it's something we butted up against for years and years and years, and it's just getting worse every year. So we have myriad numbers of things that are past their life expectancy, so this money will allow us to replace that in a more orderly fashion. So I'm very, very appreciative of this. I was smiling for 2 days when I heard about it, so thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Horvath. Good to hear from you. Commissioner Peterson, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Peterson, the conversation about mental health as a active farmer There are a lot of things that create part of that problem, all the variables that you can't control, like the rain or needing rain. I talked to my father yesterday. He thought I was home, and we had a conversation. He said, oh, it's really bad. We need rain. And I was thinking, I'm pretty sure they're still trying to get it in the ground. But it turns out that a little ag lesson, when you plant in wetter soil, it dries out and gets a little crust, and so those little seedlings can't get through the ground, so they need a little rain, and which what they got. And so they're busy putting soybeans in. But my point being is that there are things you cannot control. So it is really helpful that, as you know, to remove the barriers that we can for agriculture so that they can do what they need to do and do best. And I appreciate the soy innovation in this bill. It helps us to provide more markets. I look forward to seeing some. I'm really hoping we can get this done. I realize it's at the infancy stages, but I'm really hoping that to see this, because I think the research on what we can do with soy products to begin with, soybean products to begin with, and the work with the university. And I just see that as a real positive. And members, I would point out that that helps our mental health when we see an opportunity in another direction. It helps us to not be so discouraged, not to mention all the ag-related businesses around us that are also scratching their head going, boy, I don't know if I'm going to have a job eventually. And it's really important. It's hard to run that base. But I wanted to say thank you very much for your work. I appreciate it. You look like you might have even been in the field lately. Mm-hmm. A little tan? No? Oh, he's been inside too long, too? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for Commissioner Peterson?
Sure.
Thank you again. So next we have Lorna Schmidt, I believe, will be coming up next. Oh, there we go. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lorna Schmidt, and I'm the Government Relations Director with the American Heart Association. I'm here today on behalf of our organization and partners of the Good Food Access Coalition to say thank you for prioritizing a reinvestment in the Good Food Access Fund as part of this year's budget negotiations. You are all familiar with the food access challenges that still exist in our state and the role that Good Food Access has played in helping to address them. Your support will ensure that that important work continues for the benefit of Minnesotans, our small food retailers, and their communities. So we greatly appreciate the commitment that you, that Commissioner Peterson, and MDA staff have shown for sustaining this resource, and we look forward to continuing to work with you in the coming months to support implementation and build upon the program's success even more. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schmidt. Any questions? I don't see any. Thank you. Next, I have Lucas Sjostrom. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Lucas Sjostrom, Executive Director of the Minnesota Milk Producers Association, and I'm here to also say thank you, especially to the staff. I was listening on the way in, and I don't know how you could not vote for this bill with Mr. Sullivan and others describing it in the eloquent way they do. Thanks to the staff at the administration in the departments we work with the most, Departments of Agriculture and MPCA. I look to this side of the room, and we have dairy is different. We work with all of these people in so many different ways, for better and for worse, and the same to all of you legislators. Representative Anderson, who I know is listening at home, woke up just a few miles from me. I don't know what he's doing fieldwork-wise, but I hope he's making progress because it is wet. So, again, thank you on behalf of our 2,600 dairy farmers in the state that are remaining and the roughly 700 members of Minnesota Milk. We're very appreciative of the Agriculture Conference Committee and your attention to our dairy situation. As you know, and we heard this morning, there's $5 million for dairy relief, and we also just got word that we believe the jobs bill is closed, as you had said, and it's $3 million there as well. And financially, that's going to be a little bit of help for dairy farmers. They're going to feel good. But one of the big reasons we felt really good about doing this is the mental aspect, as Representative Brand had asked earlier. Making this meaningful, which I believe is what $8 million got us to, that's also mental support that you can't put a price on. And, I mean, it's hard to make that argument, and you can't do it every day. But being that we are in the fifth year of a three-year cycle down, which is a joke, but also true, we've seen upswings a few times on the horizon. And this time it looks like it might be for real. But this is the right help at the right time, paired to the right program and the right circumstances. So thank you for that. As you know, our farms dropped 10% year over year at the beginning of this year, and these historic closure rates, I'm afraid, are going to continue without some optimism. But I do think your bill does this, as I've been kind of quietly not getting people too excited and telling them this might be on the horizon. Our co-op processor managers, our other processors, our dairy farmer leaders, you know, they think of their neighbors. They usually don't think of themselves. My board, which is pretty representative of the whole state, but as you can imagine, larger farmers have more time to commit to a board because they have more resources. So we skew a little bit larger, but really try hard to represent every dairy farm in the state. Half of them are not eligible, and they're so pleased that this is going through because they're thinking of their thinking of their neighbors, thinking of their vendors who are waiting to get paid. So we don't mean to ignore the price or economic hardship going on in other parts of the agriculture county, particularly with the wet weather that this spring planting season has brought. But we're in gut check mode in our industry. And so we're, as we've said before, searching for a hand up and not a handout. We have a lot to look forward to when the milk price recovery happens and our infrastructure and efficient Minnesota cows and bountiful and affordable feed and forage grown here will once again flourish. And with the tariffs coming off in Canada and Mexico, that's other good news for this week. And so hopefully good things come in threes. And I think you have the other two embedded in different parts of this bill. The $5 million provision in the conference committee report helping provide Minnesota dairies producing 16 million pounds of milk and below with small incentive payments to encourage their participation in the new slash revised Federal Dairy Margin Coverage, or DMC program, is going to help, and it's going to incentivize participation and literally ensure the state of Minnesota. So we are proud to be Minnesota Milk, proud to have worked with you, proud to have worked with the excellent staff in our administration, and we certainly need this and feel it is fully warranted. So in summary, we cannot thank the committee enough for dedicating these dollars and following this approach to supplement the Dairy Margin Coverage Program. I thank you, Madam Chair, for the time at the beginning of the session to kind of lay this out, and I hope that helped explain the situation, especially for some of the new members who haven't been through the ag policy before. But, again, every little bit will help at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shostrom. Representative Brand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Shostrom, just out of curiosity, you had mentioned 10% year-to-year. Do you have any numbers for this year about how many dairy producers have left since the beginning of the year, the last 5 months?
Mr. Shostrom.
Madam Chair, Representative Brand, some of your staff have asked that same question, and trying to be truthful but also eloquent in that answer is really difficult based on the numbers we have. Our inspectors in the state of Minnesota visit each farm around every 6 months, and so our numbers are always lagging. So we know it was 10.1% on January 1st, but as the inspectors department can tell you, they have seasonal herds come back on, so you pretty much have to look at year over year, and that's been about 270 since the beginning of the year that we've lost on record, I believe, is the number. But, you know, it's more than that on a seasonal basis. Also, I do think that some people are waiting for this federal portion of the insurance because you can sign up the first day and quit. I've received several phone calls that people will probably be doing that. So I know there's many people who plan on June 17th, the day of sign-up, to go into their FSA office, sign up, and quit. And that's not, you know, we've captured in that program that that's not how this is going to work, but I do see that on the horizon. So close to 300, it may be more.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Shostrom. Appreciate it. Mr. Lurie. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Lurie, a government relations director for Minnesota Farmers Union. And just want to take the opportunity to briefly thank the committee, staff of the department, and all the members for all the hard work on a bill that we're really eager to see move forward and feel like is a really positive step forward for farmers of all kinds and sizes at a time when a strong agriculture bill is really needed. You know, Commissioner Peterson alluded to this study, but you know, we saw that study from the U that showed that, that on-farm income last year was $26,000, a median of $26,000. So a strong ag bill is so needed. And you know, I'll just take the opportunity to thank you specifically for a few things that I've heard from our members as we've talked about this bill in the past couple months. And those are first and foremost the investments in farmer mental health and rural mental health and the Farm Advocate Program are so important. Additional funding for meat inspections to get rid of that backlog, grants in the Noxious Weed Program, investments in hemp, investments in developing new markets, including farm to school. And finally, what Lucas so eloquently talked about in that direct relief for dairy farmers will be so important to our members. So, of course, hard choices are needed to get to a bill like this, and there are some things that we'll want to work on next session. Representative Walzwick, you talked about the farmer legal assistance, and that's something we will want to pick up on. But bottom line, we're eager to support this bill, feel like it's a huge step forward, and want to thank you for all your incredible work on it. So thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any questions. Thank you.
Thanks.
I have Paul Sobosinski next. And Ms. Babcock.
If it's okay, I would like to go first. Is
sure.
That all right with you? Great.
Sure.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. My name is Amanda Babcock. I'm the state policy organizer with the Land Stewardship Project, and I'm here on behalf of our 4,300 household members across the state. On behalf of our members, we want to thank you for the good work that you have done this session. We're really excited that this committee has recognized and invested in emerging farm-to-school markets. We see this as a key step forward in our local food systems, rural communities, and local economies, and we think more investment in this area is needed, and we're looking forward to working with the department to implement this and with this committee in the future to invest more in this emerging market. With the average farm income being at the lowest in 23 years, as many have talked about this morning, we really have been focusing on addressing the current family farm crisis, and our members value the work of the department's Farm Advocates Program and appreciate what they're doing for family farmers who are facing financial and legal crisis, and we appreciate that their funding was increased in this budget. Money spent here is really critical because it keeps family farmers on the land, and we encourage the committee to consider further increasing their funding in future years. We also appreciate the inclusion of dairy grants for our family dairy farmers who are particularly facing financial crisis in the current farm economy. We're interested in helping the department implement this program and help keep more family farmers on the land and increase the number of family farmers on the land. Additionally, we're happy to see an increase in funding for the meat and poultry inspection services. This is particularly important for Minnesota's independent meat processors and small and medium-sized livestock farmers who sell direct, who are a critical part of our healthy local food system. So we look forward to continuing our work with this committee and the department to develop a sustainable and just farm and food system that fosters a strong family farm system, vibrant rural communities, and healthy land. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Babcock. Mr. Sobosinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to testify. My name is Paul Sobosinski. I'm from Wabasso, Minnesota. I'm a livestock farmer with both cattle and hogs, also an organizer with the Land Stewardship Project. Madam Chair, Representative Poppe, I'd like to thank you for all the work that you have done with this bill. Overall, I think it's a very good bill. There's a lot of pieces included in here that covers a broad perspective, and I appreciate that work and what you have brought to this. A couple pieces I want to say before I cover the pasture piece that I have concerns with, but one of the pieces I wanted to say in terms of the farm crisis, I appreciate the House did allocate money for the Farmer Legal Action Group. Was disappointed that didn't see that come through. I know you worked hard on that, and as a person who worked during the farm crisis of the 1980s, I know that's what we're facing again right now, and so one of the big things that farmers, when they faced up against the wall, and that's what farmers are going to be seeing with their lenders, is the importance of having the resources. One is, you know, the counseling. The Farm Advocate helps the farmer when under stress, but also you need the best legal guidance, too. So this is an area that we need to work more on in the future. So with that, I want to express to you some of the concerns that I have regarding the provision of this bill in regards to the definition of pasture to include certain feedlots. The original language that this provision comes from was never, to our knowledge, introduced as a standalone bill in either body and was never given a hearing as such. It was first seen when amended to the Senate Ag Omnibus Policy Bill. As this language alters feedlots and pollution laws, it is under the jurisdiction of the Environment Committee and, according to Senate rules, does not even belong in this bill. The final compromise language became available to the public approximately a half hour before it was adopted and never had a chance for public comment. The definition of pasture was created carefully and intentionally following proper legislative process years ago. Altering this definition should be done with care and have the input of many livestock producers not rushed in the last weeks of the legislative session. In essence, this language allows the feedlot to operate and be regulated as a pasture for up to 90 days during the growing season in response to an extraordinary situation. The term extraordinary situation, as far as we know, is undefined and thus vague. Because pasture systems and feedlot systems differ, they have to be treated differently. Our current state law does that. On pasture, manure is placed on the land and vegetated cover works as a filter that actually can improve water quality. In feedlots, the ground has no living cover. Livestock herds are held more densely, and manure is prone to runoff if not managed well. Because of this, feedlots was appropriately regulated by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to protect our water quality. I was involved when our state government created a definition for pasture. It was carefully crafted in a way that values our pastured livestock and our natural resources, keeping in sync with science. As currently defined under Minnesota Pollution Control Law, pasture is appropriately exempt from feedlot regulation by MPCA. Allowing a feedlot to operate under the definition of a pasture for up to 90 days with no limits as to the density of livestock, number of livestock per acres, on this unvegetated land creates a concerning potential for the amount of manure that could end up in our watering systems. Another factor is that many people, for example, who do make use of pasture, do rotational grazing, and raised animals and have a market that's developed based upon grass-fed and other market delineations. This could affect that in a negative way. The terms, in terms of density, you know, for the typical operation or a beef cow operation that's putting livestock out, or even if you're grazing other animals, is you're talking to 1 to 2 head per acre. This language is unclear about that and needs to be solved. And with the definition of pasture being so important, we are unclear why there's an urgency to resolve this so quickly. We'd like to have this set aside this session to work with livestock farmers, the administration, and other key parties to visit this issue during the interim period to ensure that we are truly resolving the needs to be resolved in a way that works for family farmers, rural communities, our land, and our water. We also want to express that when legislative process is not followed, the people are the ones who are hurt. In the future, we urge that MPCA laws remain under the purview of the Environment Committee and that proposed policy receive ample opportunity for public participation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Subsinski, as well, for your just sharing your concerns around the pasture language. I simply wanted to say that there was, on the House side, there was significant concern with this pasture language as well, and a great deal of work was done to narrow the focus of it. As Commissioner Peterson mentioned, it has moved to a much better place, and the MPCA was working very hard on that as well. But I want to assure you as well that I'll be paying very close attention to the impact of this language as it is. I'd be glad to work with you going forward to make sure that there are not adverse impacts of the language in the way it's structured now.
Thank you.
Madam Representative Liebert, I appreciate that and more than happy to do that. And as I highlighted, density is a big key piece. And I also know from some of our members in some of the areas why I believe this language came forward. There's a problem. There's some problems in the state in terms of feedlots attempting to use pasture to circumvent. And that's what I don't want to see happen.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Aaron McKee. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Aaron McKee, and I'm the Community Food Systems Director at the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. But I'm addressing you today on behalf of the large stakeholder group that's been working on farm-to-school and early care policy for the last five-plus years. And we also wanted to say thank you so much for including support for farm-to-school and early care in this bill, especially the marketing position, which explicitly calls out some support for farm-to-school. We really think that that is a needed centralized support that will really make a difference for farmers to connect to these markets. And also, of course, in Agri, that there is inclusion of money for a grants program and also the opportunity to potentially pilot a program where we would actually reimburse schools and early cares for their purchases of local foods. And this is something that we've seen in a lot of other states. They've been trying this, and I think it's a good opportunity to pilot it, to gather information, and kind of see how this might work in Minnesota. And I think it could be a really good opportunity that would be really good for everyone involved and will be a major step forward to support growing our farm-to-school and early care programs. And I really want to thank the department for being open to potentially piloting that program, and to thank this committee for including us in your version of the bill, and then for Chair Poppy for all of your work and the negotiations to keep that in there, because we did not get included in the Senate version, so we really appreciate all of the work that you did to do that. I also wanted to thank Representative Keel, who was our chief author in 2017, and all the people who co-signed on this, and especially Representative Liebert. Oh, no. You're just such a great champion, and we've really appreciated everything you've done for our work. So I just want to say, as we talk about our bills and our budgets being reflections of our values, I think that I'm just so heartened by the support for this as a positive, proactive vision of something that's good for farmers, good for kids, and good for our community. So thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Skuda, I have Glenn. Is he here? There he is. Oh. Maybe I've said your last name incorrectly. I apologize.
You're right.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Morning, Madam Chair. I'm Glenn Skuda, the Watershed Division Director at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and just wanted to state, related to the pasture language that's been discussed this morning, that as Representative Liebert said, there was a lot of conversation over the last couple of weeks about the language that had been brought forth by the Senate, and we had had some concerns about how broadly it was written. And as Commissioner Peterson said, we worked to discuss that language and narrow it down so that we feel that it is much more appropriate, so that we are able to let pastures be pastures and regulate feedlots as feedlots, and in the gray area in between there, the language that's written gives us the authority we need to both allow for, in, as it's written, extraordinary circumstances to give the flexibility to the operators that need that when they are in extraordinary circumstances. But at the same time, when it is a feedlot, we will be able to regulate as such. So we are satisfied with the language as currently written, and we appreciate the work everyone did to modify that language.
Thank you. I'm just going to ask a question about the density issue that is not addressed in that language. So is that do you have any comments about that?
Well, allows for some, again, flexibility or enforcement discretion by either the agency or the county feedlot officers, to deal with that. But I think what is in the language that helps with making sure that that's not too broadly applicable is the 90-day in extraordinary circumstances provision. Otherwise, you know, that is what basically defines the feedlot, is the density issue. And if there's an operation that is over the limits for the number of animals for the area being used, they're going to be regulated as a feedlot. If it's a grazing operation that is truly operating as pastures, they will be exempt as pastures. In these circumstances, it's only for extraordinary circumstances and for a limited amount of time. And as the language also states, those sacrificial areas also have to be regenerated as well.
Thank you. We have a question. Representative Wadsworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about how that works. Do they have to notify PCA that they're doing that? Or, I mean, who's the 90-day period? How is that on just the people who are doing this to make sure they're within that period? Or how does that work? And then is the 90-day period over a certain amount of time, like 90 days in a year, 90 days in general? I guess if you could just talk a little bit more about what that means.
I believe the language states 90 days during the growing season, so it's limited to that time period. Otherwise, there's not a notification requirement. So most of the operators, though, are in pretty regular contact with county feedlot officers and/or our agency. In situations where we're not in contact, sometimes if we receive complaints, you know, that's something we would go out and inspect and make sure that the 90-day provision is being followed, or potentially on a regular inspection basis, someone, you know, that we might run into a situation like this. But I think if we're really talking about extraordinary circumstances, that's when we are typically in much more regular contact with producers and we and the county feedlot officers and aware of those situations.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. I don't see any other questions. Thank you for your testimony. Let's see. We have Amber Glazer. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Amber Hansen-Glazer. I'm the Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau. I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you, leadership in this committee specifically, Chair Poppy, members of the Conference Committee, this committee as a whole, and members of the Department of Agriculture for all your hard work and leadership in getting a bill done almost on time and full of compromise. I think it's reassuring to farmers to see ag getting their work done again this year and making sure that they know that members of this committee and over in the Senate really have their best interests in mind. We were pleased to see a handful of Minnesota Farm Bureau priorities addressed in this bill, primarily the financial and emotional challenges facing farmers. That's nothing new to this committee. Obviously, mental health was a huge component that we are glad to see. We're also excited to see that there are provisions that are intended to help ag move ahead during this time. It's one thing to address the current emotional challenges, but also glad to see that there are provisions that will help agriculture move out of these rough economy. A lot of those include the research, including the GREET funding, which we're very excited to see that stay, as well as the innovation that's provided in this bill, whether that's through new markets, the soy campus, the hemp, those other provisions that we're really excited to see the ag economy hopefully move forward through provisions in this bill. There's also the broadband that will help our rural communities move forward. And then just the bottom line of food and how important that is to the state. And this bill will help Minnesota farmers provide access to sustainable, safe, healthy food choices for everyone here in Minnesota. So again, thank you. And we look forward to helping get this bill passed to provide some certainty for our farmers for next year.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I didn't have anybody else on the list, but if there's anyone else who wanted to testify, certainly can come down. Mr. Clavin. Good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bruce Clavin, I represent Minnesota State Cattlemen. I had not prepared to speak, Madam Chair, but I think some rebuttal comments would be helpful for you all. Representative Brand asked about past years. You did not hear it over here. Let me start with Mr. Sobosinski. This conversation about the last week is actually been over 2 months since this was heard across the street. He's right, it's in the ag bill. But the entire ag policy bill was pulled over to environment and was heard sometime before March 13th. So it was put in ag across the street and went to environment, had its second reading on March 13th. So this has been sitting out there for over 2 months. He's correct in that the last week, as with a lot of the provisions, were done in the last week. But the pasture issue has been sitting there for over 2.5 months. Well, over 2 months, almost 2.5. What you see in your bill is actually a combination of definitions that were done in two separate chunks. Lines 34 to 24, the first sentence, that was done in somewhere around 1998. The reason we had to do that in 1998 is because the first draft of the 70-20 rules at that time, the government was trying to regulate all animals. And we argued that pastures are not feedlots and should not be part of the feedlot rules. So we had to go to the legislature and specifically say in state law that pastures are exempt. A few years later, somebody put cattle out on a cornfield to eat up the stubble. Is that a pasture or a feedlot? So we had to come in with the second definition. That was somewhere around 2001-ish. I know I'm on the record, but that's my recollection. And that's where you see on lines 34.28 this stuff about the growing crops during the season. That was to cover the cornfields. So we had to specifically come to the legislature and say that a cornfield is not a feedlot. So these definitions here you'll find later in your bill on pages 38 and 39. They're simply combined here, including all the stuff at the top of 35 up to 35.7. 35.7 to 13 is the new stuff. Sacrificial area. There are conditions, as has been discussed here this morning, extraordinary 90 days and so forth. A key phrase here is line 35.11, restored or replanted. You have to put the grass back. It's not a permanent feedlot. It's temporary. That apparently has caused a tremendous amount of heartburn. You'll also see on 36.24, pastures are exempt from the rules authorized under this paragraph. That was the 1998 sentence. What happened to Senator Westrom's constituent is covered in the rest there. Apparently, the government was holding up his feedlot permit over an alleged pasture violation. But since pastures are exempt from the rules, you can't really have a pasture violation. So this says you can't really hold up the feedlot permit over a pasture. They're exempt. That's the effort on that line. Again, lots of heartburn. I don't know what it's about, but that's what the effort was there. The final thing the committee should know is what was dropped. There was a third piece that Senator Westrom initiated here, and it's on the side-by-side R18. The sentence said, the natural deposit of manure by livestock on pasture, which would be the land, not the water, on pasture, shall not be considered a discharge into the waters of the state and shall not be subject to any fine or penalty. That sentence was dropped. I can only assume that the natural deposit of manure on land is a violation of the Clean Water Act, because when you say it, everybody got upset. So that's our perspective on what happened here with this pasture language. Representative Lippert, the temporary, the vegetative recovery, restoration, all has to happen. They have to put it back. That was one of the key pieces to make this work.
Thank you, Mr. Klavan. And just as a follow-up on that, it is very clear, just to read it out loud for people, that in sacrificial areas that are part of a larger pasture system are used to temporarily accommodate livestock due to an extraordinary situation for as short a time period as possible, not to exceed 90 days during the growing season, are used to protect other pasture areas when adverse soil or weather conditions pose a risk of damaging the pastures and on which the vegetation is naturally restored or replanted after the adverse soil or weather conditions are removed and the livestock are moved to the other areas of the pasture. That is what was the compromise language that MPCA was at the table. We talked to feedlot officers. They may have some issues yet just in how they're going to look at this, but my understanding from a number of people was it was okay to add some more clarifying language, because when there is a flooding situation or something else that happens, this might provide some additional clarity, and that would be helpful. So I think, and it was something Senator Westrum and the Senate were very strongly wanting in the bill. So it was one of the last provisions we did, because we had a couple of items that they were not seeing favorably, and this was one that from our side we had some issues with. So to come together, this is what compromise is. You try to come up with the best language that you can, that people can agree to, maybe not agree with. But I do think that we worked a lot of hours on this and tried to get to this point. And so I appreciate, Mr. Klavan, your comments about this. Mr. Klavan.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. That's the point that you just read. You can't have 100% grass all the time. If you look at the top page 35, and again, we had to come in to the legislature and clearly state this so there was no confusion. This was, again, back somewhere between 98 and 2001. The immediate vicinity of the supplement of feeding and watering devices. You're going to have a water tank out there. They gather around the water tank. They're going to trample it down. We had a debate with the PCA back then about whether that was still a pasture or not. We had to come in and say all those first three things on the first few lines. Chutes and corrals, we had to specifically come to the legislature and state that those do not ruin your pasture exemption. And so the sacrificial area language you just read is on the same vein. I would think with land stewardship projects, use of grazing and pastures, they would be all on board this conversation about pastures. They use pastures a lot. So,
thank you, Mr. Klavan. And just to clarify again, MPCA was at the table and did approve this language in, as we came up with the compromise. So I appreciate that we had a lot of discussion around it, even though it wasn't something that we had heard in the House. We, you know, it was something that we needed to make sure we made it through in this bill. And so thank you for your comments today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I don't see any other questions from committee members, but we have maybe another person who wants to testify. So welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Don Arnosti. I represent the Isaac Walton League, and I don't want to take a lot of your time, but I do want to say the words forever green. And I want to say that while I was listening to everybody's agreement about how supportive this is for diverse agriculture, I do want to express the disappointment and the aspiration that this committee will invest in and take a look at that program that is seeking to diversify the crop system so that farmers are not so dependent on just a handful of crops whose markets right now are not good. And we hope that in the future you'll have the funding to be able to invest in that University of Minnesota research and crop diversification program that we think will benefit farmers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arnosti. You're probably following the Legacy Committee.
I am following the Legacy Committee, and I do know that they have, Madam Chair, $4.3 million in there, at least in their proposal at this point.
That's what I believe is true. So just want to make sure it's Forever Green didn't drop off the completely off the list. It was did find funding in another committee, and as much as possible we tried to reach out and get what we could in this bill as well, but it did find a home, at least through that process.
Madam Chair, thank you, and we do appreciate that, but I do think the leadership of the Agriculture Committee is important when you're talking about a primarily agricultural program. So in the future, if it's possible, even a modest investment is a signal that this is important to other funding sources as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Wazlowick, I might have missed you previously. Okay. I wasn't sure if I had or if I called on you. I'm sorry. Any other comments or questions? Any other person in the audience who wants to speak and raise any awareness that we might have missed or concerns or issue again some strong, wonderful support for this very good bill? All right, I don't see any, and I don't see any other comments, so I think with that, we have nothing further before us, so meeting adjourned.